The method.
Ideas. Method became
unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
Without doubt. Do you call it unsound method?
I don't see any method at all.
Hello and welcome to Unsound Methods with me, Jamie Batchin.
And me, Lachlan Bloom. For those of you listening to the podcast for the first time, this is part of a series where we talk to fellow writers of literary fiction about their process and technique.
In this episode, which is episode 23, we speak to Mazin Salim, who is the author of The Prick, which is published as part of Open Pen's series of novelettes. We spoke to Mazin about discovering that he was not really a night owl, much to his disappointment, his use of software to improve his writing productivity, and the freedom he finds of jumping around the manuscript as he's editing, rather than having to completely unpick bits in the order at which they come to him.
Without any further ado, episode 23. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We could start maybe by your routine, if you have a routine when it comes to writing fiction.
I like to think I have a routine, and I definitely have one more than I ever used to. I think I convinced myself that I was a night owl purely because I happened to stay up later and later, and if I did do some writing, it would then occur at midnight. Similar to like left brain, right brain hypothesis, I think people sort of glom onto this idea to justify the patterns that they're following anyway. And so I would be like, oh, it's fine. I've not done any writing yet because I'm a night owl. I'll start at 11. And then if you have a full-time job, that starts to get quite taxing. And I think the big sort of bullet I had to bite was to get up early and do it first thing. Mm-hmm. And so that's roughly like it's not strictly scheduled, but the main thing I try to do is to make writing the first thing I do. Ideally before even things like having breakfast, because that can always lead to watching YouTube or sitting on the internet or whatever.
And does that mean that you have a laptop or a pad or something by you, but do you literally sort of write as soon as you can from
when I like the other sort of breakthrough was to try and write longhand, certainly when doing early drafts, and also kind of turning my laptop into a practically useless machine where, you know, the sort of whole cult of the dumb phone.
Yeah.
I've similarly kind of got so many productivity kind of locks on my laptop that, theoretically it means that I can only use it for work most of the time. Although really what it means is that if I need to get a PDF because I've got a ticket to go on a plane, I can't access it.
So you've bought specific, is this things like Freedom and stuff, that specific software?
So I didn't get Freedom. I got one which is called Stay Focused, which has what they call the nuclear option, where you can just completely block your internet. Although the thing I like about all of these things is that they're actually quite easy to circumvent. So they're more like prompts for your willpower.
Mm-hmm. Because it's more of the kind of guilt aspect that you feel guilty turning it off.
So long as you increase, I think, in kind of all these pop psychology books, they call it activation energy. So long as you make it ever so slightly more difficult, then as you said, you feel a bit more guilty. You know, it's one thing to automatically half-consciously type in a URL. But if you have to go through certain steps in order to do that, you do sort of, it increases your self-disgust with your behavior. And so you're more likely to be like, do I really want to access this app, which leads me, you know, it's like a treasure hunt. There's then a clue in my drawer with a lock. And if there's enough of those barriers, eventually you'll exploit your inbuilt laziness to your advantage, because you're like, oh well, I just can't be asked to do all that, I may as well write.
So do you write longhand as a sort of first protocol now, or would you like, you get up in the morning, start writing, would you write the whole sort of session, however long that is, until
so the longhand breakfast thing is more of a phase for a project as opposed to a daily thing? So if I'm kind of deep into later drafts, then I'll be using my computer. But certainly for most, apart from like the shortest short stories, I really do try and write longhand and genuinely now do enjoy it more. The only issue is like having to type it up, and there are points where if I've been doing it for a while, it takes a surprisingly long amount of time to type up notes, especially if your handwriting's as bad as mine, where there's a sort of element of cryptography to it as well.
Yeah. So do you write the whole draft piece in longhand?
Yeah, pretty much. Like I'll again, it'll be alternating back and forth. But I would say for the majority of like a manuscript, it will have been at some point, it would have existed as longhand.
And do you have any sort of research phase with it? Like when you come up with a new idea and you start writing in longhand, are you sort of writing in the morning and then in the afternoon researching some of the ideas that popped up, or is everything...
Like one thing I've tried to establish is like my friend Elsa, who's also a writer, was saying that she finds that you can't actually, or at least in her experience, you can't write more than a few hours of like solid creative writing. But if you still feel like you want to do something, I've tried to incorporate what I call like writing admin, which is all the stuff like typing up notes or organizing notes. Although I think organizing is a bit of a dangerous one. I think there's a form of procrastination, which is organization. Like one of the sort of headline notes I have in my, well, I was going to say desk. I don't really have a desk, which is just organization is not the same as writing. It's like the old thing you do at school where you have to revise for an exam, and so you do a colourful table for 3 hours first.
3 hours? That's the first 3 days of revision, is yeah. Working out the revision timetable.
So the note-taking, is that something that happens before you sort of put pen to paper in a sense? Do you have a bunch of notes and ideas bubbling under and then think, okay, this has got to the stage where I'm going to start writing the story itself?
Yeah. I mean, to slightly speak a bit more better about internet tools, I have like a note-taking app, which on the one hand has been really useful because it's one of those apps where you can tag your notes with keywords. And just having everything in one place and trying to use it as the first port of call when you have an idea, as opposed to scribbling it on a post-it or having some in your phone, et cetera, et cetera. So
is that app, it's you kind of type in through the keyboard. It's not like you don't record.
I think I think there is like a voice memo function. But yeah, it's called Simple Note. It's free. Just a bit of free publicity for them. The only issue with it is that there is this sort of like nagging sense that, well, what am I going to do with all that stuff now? Once you have it all in one place and you've got the, I don't know what writers used to call it. It was like a daily book. It was the sort of, you know, the thoughts I have and I write them down.
Yeah.
But I think if you had them all separate, you wouldn't feel as overwhelmed as you do when you have everything really that you've ever written in one app. And that becomes its own form of writer's block, where it's like writer's block combined with vanity. Like I remember China Mayville on his blog, I forget who the person was, but his landing page was a sort of quote about writers always think their thoughts are so important. When most people have these thoughts, they just don't bother to write them down. And I think there is a vanity to these sort of daily books or journals where you're like, well, I must do something with all of this one day. Otherwise, it's a waste. So I don't know, maybe it's better to be a bit sort of zen about it and accept that not all of this will one day be something. It's more like a sort of well that you can draw from.
I think that's true. And I take notes as well on the phone, but it kind of then viewing everything through this lens of a tiny screen of glass, whereas if you have multiple, I guess it's just, I have the notebook, I have the phone with me at all times normally these days, so it's always there, whereas I used to write in notebooks and have multiple notebooks, and you kind of know, oh, that's got that stuff, and I don't know, I guess that's how mnemonics work, of having a memory palace of things, having physical different objects somehow made it easier to remember where stuff was.
Yeah.
Go back to my phone. You can search, but it, it's a whole different approach to remembering it.
Absolutely. It's like the memory hole. Like, yeah. I think one of the advantages of writing longhand is I don't want to be too kind of like sort of fetishizing physical objects, but to go back to revision, you remember stuff if you write it down physically, I think, better than if you type it.
So how do you find you go from having notes and these sort of everyday ideas, or some better than others and some you think, oh, there's potential there. How do you go from getting this mass of notes and thinking, right, I'm actually going to start writing a story? Is there a specific moment normally where it all kind of crystallizes, or you think, oh, I've been writing about this theme for the last couple of weeks, I think it's starting to take shape as a story? Or
like some from column A and some from column B, there's definitely been kind of these moments of serendipity where literally just from scrolling through notes, you'll catch something that you've not read in a while, and that'll spark an idea. It's also happened the other way around, where you sort of have an idea and you specifically search out, as I said, especially now you can keyword notes. Although I actually have found in my experience that second way is less useful. You'd think that would be the whole point and benefit of using technology for note-taking. But it feels a bit like it's the kind of process that I find more useful for writing nonfiction. Mm. When you are gathering information to put into certain boxes, almost like structuring an essay with certain points you need to hit. And yes, then that can be very useful to very quickly search for certain informations by theme. But I haven't found in my experience that in fiction, it works that well. And I think that's a lot to do with the, like, personally speaking, the sort of flow of the early drafts. It sort of needs to exist in its own kind of continuous moment where you'll sit down and then you'll sort of like blurt out a first draft. And if you are interrupting that, or if I'm speaking personally, interrupting that to be like, oh, right, well, there's a tree in this scene. Let's see what I've noted about trees before. Yeah. Like that just, yeah, that kind of inorganic process doesn't feel very fruitful, or hasn't been very fruitful.
And so you say that from experience. You've tried doing that, have you? And then gone back and found that it's sort of a duff note where you've shoehorned is not really the term after, but yeah, you've sort of put some theme because you're like, oh yeah, I remembered I was going to put that in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think there have been moments where you've noticed in a piece which is halfway through, well, this area is a bit flat, or this just feels like it needs to be summarized. There have been like a few rare moments where going back to your note database, in virtue of it just being like that there was a reason you wrote down a more interesting note, and so that is going to be slightly more slightly better written than the sort of flat or trivial stuff in your existing draft. I don't want to get too sort of mystical about these things, but it's that because it's almost like it's being taken from a different moment of time and a different, you were in a different headspace when you wrote that note as you are compared to when you're writing this draft. And so sort of putting the two and two together, yeah, it can feel a bit forced. But maybe that's just a psychological thing. Maybe that's just because, you know, some of these notes are so old, they feel quite unfamiliar to you. Whereas the thing you're currently working on sort of feels fresh and that you're, you know, you're channeling something.
And I guess they could have fed into your thoughts in general in a sort of less conscious way. When you notice something that has sort of filtered in, it was more of a mood or just a hint of something that you couldn't quite get.
So yeah. Then,
as you say, when you sort of sit down and just let yourself really flow with the first draft, that those things might be feeding into it without you having to go through sort of an itemized list of things, making sure you put everything in. So yeah, I sort of see that.
I think Zadie Smith talked about, I forget what the two terms she used were. Maybe it was even like micro and macro. But she herself claimed that she always writes without really going back on herself. and will, if she's written something in some way that needs to be part of the final product. And she contrasted herself with writers who can sort of work more like a kind of a collage, where they can take cannibalize elements from an old story, or with the current story, they can massively sort of deconstruct it and put it back together again. Mm. And she was claiming that she herself and a whole sort of tranche of writers can't do that or won't do that, where for them it has to be all sort of one sort of through line of inspiration. Mm. Which I don't know, which I am, well, I don't even know if I subscribe to that, but for the sake of argument, I think a lot of people probably switch between the two. That would seem to be.
Yeah, I think, I mean, personally, and thinking of my noting, it kind of varies at what stage I'm at and what the notes are. I mean, it can vary from sort of a word almost that I'm going to remember what that is, hopefully, but nobody else is going to make head or tail of it.
Yeah.
And sometimes I might sort of write, you know, almost a finished sort of paragraph or 4 or 5 paragraphs or something as a more, I guess that's when I'm sort of further on with a piece, sort of inhabiting the space, and I might be somewhere away from anything I can write more extensively and sort of want to write a longer note. But yeah, I feel that there's different types of note taking which lend themselves to different types of use, I guess, later on. I don't know, when you're taking notes, do they, I mean, if you showed somebody your notes, would they be comprehensible to anyone else, or are they a sort of cryptic mash of things just purely to remind you about an idea, or would any of it be fully formed sentences, paragraphs that
I would say the majority are, they're often fully formed. I mean, fully formed, by which I mean that they're in the form of prose rather than notes. So they'll still, if they're used, go through a drafting process. But they're written as often, more often than not, as sort of like, as if they were a part of a story.
So it would be a section of a story rather than a sort of broad overview of what happens in the whole.
Yeah, like I would say the 20% of the notes are exactly more like the sort of pointer type notes, like a premise for a story, like a device that you could use in a story. But often the thing I'm writing down is the turn of phrase that's come into my head. So the specific thing I want to remember and jot down are those particular words, as opposed to an idea. Although, as I said, like, you know, the 1 in 5 notes will just be pure ideas. I think if someone read my notes, it would be, they'd be able to understand the notes. The list of keywords would probably be fairly cryptic, like a weird kind of window into a person's mind as well. Yeah. It's, you know, like when they do word clouds, and they see the certain words are bigger depending on their frequency.
Yeah.
Like it would be interesting to run the keywords through a word cloud and be like, why are there so many?
Have you ever done that? Have you?
Well, no, I mean, I literally just thought of it now. Okay, but then I've slightly
done this out of interest, just to see, just through software online, to see what the frequency of words are. Because I feel like I've got a bit of a blind spot about some words I might overuse.
Okay.
Things like that. And I'm sure like that's, I mean, I just use it as thinking, oh yeah, well, I've used that 7 times. There's no way it's important enough for that, so I can find something
else. Is that in the finish, like a finished draft, not in the notes?
Well, in a very end draft.
Yeah.
So, but I just wonder what the psychology of that really would be if you sort of looked into it. Like, I'm sure there's some sort of study. I mean, there's probably people who do PhDs on those lines looking at.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I guess a lot of it depends on a specific story is going to lend itself to reuse of words more than another story, I guess.
Oh, yeah, there could be good reasons for it. Yeah, I'm sure. And like repetition can be the sort of important tool anyway. But
I definitely, where the editing phase, going back and like, I've used that word is appearing far too many times in sort of one page of text.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how you get around that.
So I was wondering if the sort of the form of what you write lends itself to how you sort of take notes and convert them into writing. Because the book that we looked at, The Prick, which is described as a novelette, I believe, by Open Pen, Do you generally write quite short form stuff, or are you working on longer things?
So the prick was actually the second thing I submitted to OpenPen, mainly because the first idea was way too big, and mm-hmm. I think my tendency is to write much bigger. And the light bulb moment with the prick was to almost write it to spec, working backwards from their mm-hmm. upper word count, which is what suddenly made the whole project interesting and fun, was to... Like maybe calling it Oulipo is a bit pretentious, but that same sense of like, okay, well, these are your restrictions. So what creative things can you come up with? So once I knew the upper limit of word count they wanted, then breaking it down into sections and deciding that it was going to be all set pieces. And then working out how to still do summary within set pieces in hopefully interesting ways. And yeah, it's that old chestnut of like once you put certain blocks and barriers in place, then you start thinking more creatively.
So was it a considerably longer piece initially, or conceived it as a longer piece?
The prick itself, so to speak, was that size. Mm-hmm. The longer piece was something else, which I'm still working on.
Right.
But yeah, the plan A was what they said was too big. Mm-hmm. So prick was plan B, although that's not to say it's like second best or anything. It was more that I recognized late on that the whole point of the project shouldn't be to, I think, as I was saying to Sean once, it shouldn't be to either beef up a short story or to pare down a novel. You should be thinking of the form from the outset of mm-hmm. like what kind of story would work best at this particular length.
And is that something that comes, you're talking about the longer piece you're working on, at what point did you decide that was a longer piece? So did you have an idea for the sort of overarching theme or plot of the story, and after thinking about it a while, decide, oh, this needs to be a longer piece? Or did it come at the same time as having a concept of this story that it was, you know, it has to be this length or that length?
So the it originally started out as a short story idea, and then the reason it got longer was almost like when kids ask their parents, but why? And then they just keep on going on going. Mm. And it kind of expanded outwards more and more, and eventually was just like, I think when I sort of, by the time I submitted it to OpenPen, I think I knew already that it wasn't going to work for them at that size, that there wouldn't really be a way to cut it down. And very nicely, the guys at OpenPen sort of agreed with me, or sort of you had the same idea at the same time, that it would do a disservice to the bigger book to try and cut it down. So we decided to go with a different idea, which ended up being the prick.
Mm-hmm. And do you write, so you're working on a longer idea, which is a novel, is fiction.
Yes.
Do you write sort of shorter, like, because the thing with the novelette is that it seems to be a sort of a longer short story, shorter than a novella, but longer than a short story, which is, you know, you can sort of end up pulling these definitions apart. But were you used to writing traditional length short stories as well as working on a novel? Or
I think my short stories in the past have tended towards the larger size. I think every now and again there is a kind of premise or an idea where I'll write it sort of very quickly, and it'll kind of, it'll lend itself to being short. Like I'll recognize at an early stage that this only needs to be, you know, 3 pages long. And more often than not, those are sort of, story ideas that have come to me, as opposed to projects I've been meaning to work on for a while. Mm. Those are the ones which kind of accrue like notes to them, like sort of dust static, And eventually when you decide, I'm going to write that, you realize you've got so many notes. And I think one of the reasons why things initially end up being such long drafts is you don't realize it, but they've been accumulating notes for years because you've originally had that idea for a short story, you know, in 2011. And you've been continuing to take notes and not really been thinking about it other than, well, I'll put this note to this story. And one day you sit down to write it and it ends up being 15,000 words.
And do you find that you sort of merge different stories, that you've had notes, an idea for one story, and then, you know, maybe a year later, another idea for another story. And then when you come to write, you think, actually, those all kind of join up into a universe that this is all one thing, which is longer than wanting to write.
Absolutely. Like the prick was two ideas that fit really well together. And it just is a good example as well that these things are never systematic. I've had opposite experiences where I've tried to kind of stitch together ideas, feeling like they could sort of belong together. And then the end result just being the sort of, you know, Frankenstein.
Mm.
Frankenstein's monster, rather.
We'd get emails about that.
Maybe I mean the scientist.
But I wonder then, if you might end up trying to stretch something out because it was an idea that came to you and you've spent years accumulating notes. Maybe that's a short story that you just had lots and lots of background
for,
which feels like potentially slightly heartbreaking.
Yeah,
but
that's definitely one of the psychological things you need to develop is recognizing that the main thing that matters is what your vision is for the story and what form will best embody that. And what's less important is using everything that you've written.
Because, mm-hmm. I think it's there. The best short story, it may be short by definition, but there may not be that much, but the best short stories carry that whole world within them, and you can have years and years of notes, and it crystallizes into just a few words that have an impact.
Yeah,
they're not kind of lost, even though you're not turning the notes explicitly into words on the page. I guess the one question is how you come to, it's a question I struggle with as well, but how you come to know the end of something you're writing. Like, do you feel you have any sort of event horizon of the end of this is approaching, or do you quite quickly know, well, there's this amount more to write?
I think there's stories which are sort of conceits, and with those, maybe not from the complete outset, but from very early on, you know where it's going to end and you're working backwards from that. And with those, it's a lot easier to figure out how long it needs to be and what needs to go in and what doesn't really need to be there. Other stories will be a lot more about voice or character. And then those are the ones, as you said, that's where do you put your pencil down and decide you don't need to put more into it. And I think it's the tension is between the sort of novelistic impulse and the short story impulse. I remember, I think V.S. Naipaul in an interview said that when he published, I think one of his first novels, he had this sort of anxiety that it was never going to happen again. So he had to pack in everything he knew. And I think a lot of us have that similar sense of, like, especially, I guess, first novels are often like that. It's like, this is my statement about everything. And the trick, I guess, is to separate those mindsets. So you shouldn't treat a short story, which is about revenge, and that therefore needs to have every single thought or idea or sentence you've ever written about revenge in it. It goes back to what I was saying before about, like, what's the conceit of the story? What's the overall vision, and what devices lend themselves to communicating that? And that provides the filter, that's the selector, and anything that doesn't serve that you can put by the wayside, which is a very different mentality to novels. I mean, a lot of novels and novellas and coming out of certain traditions will be very pared down and concentrated, but that kind of capacious social novel that at least used to be written, that's the sort of sensibility and imagination where it feels a bit more appropriate and the reader will expect that density of information and no need for an absolute sort of immediately discernible through line. It can just be about everything, and readers can very much be into that. But it's about, yeah, separating those mindsets when you're writing shorter fiction.
Yeah, to agree. And yeah, I think it is difficult sometimes in the first pass to identify what is, because you can justify, oh, this is definitely important for the story, and come back to editing. Why is this tangent? Why did I write that? Or you know why you wrote it, but
yeah,
reading it with a sort of fresh pair of eyes, you realize it's taking away rather than adding something in.
Absolutely. I think the idea of a fresh pair of eyes, literally just these past couple of days, I've had a story that I was trying to cut down from about 10,000 to 8,000 words, which doesn't sound like much, but as I'm sure you guys know, that can be quite grueling. And I think one of the ideas I had about this was that one of the traps is the rhythm of the words. When you've read and reread a draft so often, you have a kind of audio version of muscle memory. So you're expecting the words to go in a certain order and to hear the certain words again and again in these certain places. And that, for me, is part of the resistance to cutting it. Because it's like, oh, well, I've cut some of those sentences and now the rhythm doesn't feel the same as I remember it. And that's why you're resistant, or in my experience, I'm resistant to removing stuff. And you need to trick your way out of that by doing things like, I forget who, I think there's a book by a guy called David Madden, which is about revising fiction. I think the book, in fact, is called Revising Fiction. And one of the sort of simple techniques is just to read your story backwards. So you're no longer relying on your memory of your own writing.
Literally word for word backwards.
Not word for word backwards, but sort of sentence backwards or paragraph backwards.
Because otherwise that might
yeah,
really drive around the bend.
But going into memento territory.
Yeah, I think that is really interesting with the sort of muscle memory thing. And yeah, it's something I definitely feel to come up against, that it's not that it feels right because you've maybe read it so many times, but there's no objective truth in what is or isn't correct, but the fact that it feels right can be a trick.
Yeah,
and it feels right because you've habituated yourself to absolutely. It rather than somebody else reads it, then you look back and go, actually, yeah, well, I don't need that at all.
Yeah,
actually, I don't need this bit or that bit. But
yeah,
that process is hard, especially when you sort of get deep into editing. You have to be reading and rereading stuff.
Yeah. Though making it even harder is, I think Virginia Woolf said that for her, the most important thing about her prose was rhythm. And the argument wasn't just for the sake of the musicality of the writing. It was literally talking about how the development of the thought, I think she described it as like the wave of the mind, which then Ursula Le Guin used as a name of an essay. The flow of the thought is expressed in the rhythm. So rhythm isn't pure musicality. And so one of the difficulties is identifying those parts of the prose where the rhythm is just a thing you've gotten used to, and hence you'd miss if you cut it, but that's just a personal thing. Or the rhythm is intrinsic to the power and the meaning and the effectiveness of the sentence. And there's no real way to discern between the two other than practice.
That's interesting. Yeah, I wonder how you become a sort of objective gauge of that for your own writing. Yeah, there is no, yeah. I guess you've just got to keep shaking it until it feels right. Haven't you? But,
And then I think on top of that, there's a, there's a kind of need to kind of shake up, or I find that reading other writers and reading my own writing, I want a rhythm for a certain amount of time, and then I want something else to come in and create some sort of dynamics within the work. And getting that is tricky because you can have a long section where you think, yeah, the rhythm, the cadence of the words, that this whole section works, but actually you need to cut out the last third of it and jump into something else that creates some juxtaposition, and a new rhythm takes over, and a musical analogy, you've got different instruments coming in and out as taking sort of solo of the theme of what you're doing. And I find that hard in editing, to know when there's nothing particularly wrong with the rhythm of a section, but knowing where to cut it and where to carry on, or, you know, maybe it needs even more of that particular section.
So with regard into editing, what other sort of strategies do you have? For example, if you, I mean, that was a specific length reason that you were trying to cut down by 20% from 10,000 to 8,000, is it? Other than maybe reading it backwards, how else do you approach cutting things out or finding places when more needs to go in?
You'd be amazed by I was going to say at this stage, but it's not like I'm old. amount of whimsy that still manages to creep into writing, and the amount of just personal voodoo. So just like I guess it's almost like the literary equivalent of OCD, where like I tend to always do things in sevens. And so if I need to have a number of something in the writing, I'll be like, may as well be seven. But really that's not part of the artistic vision. That's just your personality intruding. And that's a very specific example, but a lot of it can just be like, oh, well, there's like a, I'm going to sneak in like a little reference to my own personal life, or just like an in-joke that only I myself will get. And before you know it, all that stuff has sort of snuck in there and started to pad out the work. And you kind of almost don't even realize you're doing it until you've stepped away from the draft for a while. Then you come back and be like, why are these like silly little things still in there? And then it's that sense of ruthlessness towards your own book. Like, I don't really buy the whole kill your darlings thing, because it's never, you need the wider context of what are you killing them for. I think that whole ethos comes out of that kind of minimalist Carver kind of writing, where less is always more, which I don't agree with. But I do think you need to have a certain amount of self-awareness of why have you put this in there? And is it really to do with the story?
Yeah, I think it is interesting, that sort of the whimsy or sort of personal in-jokes. I think there is a kind of need for that in fiction to have a playfulness in it. But obviously when it gets too sort of top-heavy, it becomes a morass of sentences that you know the meaning of, but nobody else does.
Yeah.
I think finding that line between... Because I agree that sort of the Carver minimalist approach has its place, and I enjoy reading it, but I don't think that's the whole picture, not what I want to do in fiction entirely. But I think you transmitting a sense of playfulness through fiction is really important.
Yeah. But no, I couldn't agree more. I think the thing that helps you draw the line is, will your reader be playing along? Or is it just something that only you could really discern? And that's a good kind of yardstick. Definitely you want the readers here to have a fun time. But the good sort of rule is will they get it?
I think if they don't get it, they're quickly going to put that in the book and not get it anymore at all. When it comes to editing, then do you sort of have a longhand finished draft, type that up in its entirety, and then start editing? Or are you sort of typing up, you know, first five pages and sort of editing on the go as you do that?
With longer projects, I'll be typing up on the go. Trying to remember how it went with The Prick. I feel like The Prick was mainly handwritten before it was typed up, and the sort of second draft was then all sort of typed up in one go, and that's when the sort of structural work began.
So you typed just verbatim what was on the page and didn't change anything until you then had it all typed up. And
well, that's interesting. I think there's definitely, you start to editorialize as you type, but I try to avoid that only because I want to remember and be able to refer to easily the first draft, which was the handwritten draft. Mm. And so, yeah, I will try to just you know, type it up as if I'm taking dictation.
That's interesting, just quickly, because you must make sort of mental notes about things, really. Oh, that's not quite working, or that's inconsistent. But if you're trying to be disciplined, you won't change it then. And I personally would get the fear that I'll forget that I spotted that sort of drop stitch or something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, the sort of handwritten stuff is full of kind of like arrows and asterisks and sort of looks like a bit of a kind of, you know, madman's diary, for want of a better word. The thing I often find hard is, it's, we've gotten so used to how easy it is to cross-reference when you work digitally that when you type up handwritten notes and there's like an arrow that goes like down the page and then it kind of like follows several pages and then ends, you know, 500 words later, and having to kind of flip back to that point and then remember that you, there's all this intervening stuff you've not typed up yet. And yeah, no, it's a good exercise.
And then once in the computer, how do you sort of edit it, sort of beginning to end, just read through and make changes from chapter one forward? Or do you have a particular sort of approach to editing at that stage?
The habit I try to get out of, and the one that I have a tendency towards, is editing as if I'm writing nonfiction. And I think one of the downsides of having, I think most of us who write long form prose will have done it for work or school reasons. And those are the habits we've formed. And I actually think that is one of the more unpleasant parts of writing, is having to systematically organize things in that way. As I said, I try to avoid that tendency and focus on the type of editing that I find most interesting and or sort of most enjoyable, which is just finding something in the written typed up draft which I want to work on. Mm. And it's sort of, something as small as a paragraph, if not like a sort of set piece or sequence, and then just sort of tool away at that until it's looking better and better, hopefully. And once you hit a wall, then sort of just shift to another area. Mm. And then it's also, that becomes a good technique for working out what really deserves to be in the book. Because if there's areas that you keep on skipping over and you're sort of thinking, oh, I don't really want to do that bit yet, like maybe you're being lazy or maybe you're not...
Because I guess the converse, there could be a paragraph that you spend a long time retooling, and the reason is that it shouldn't be there in the first place.
Well, that goes back to the self-indulgence thing. It's just like, there's a section there which is fun just for reasons that you like. But
and so you would jump around throughout the whole manuscript at that point, just a paragraph here, a paragraph there.
And again, this is like a kind of a thing that I had to learn, because previously I would have that kind of, that sort of sedimentary technique where I wouldn't be able to move on till chapter two, until I was really satisfied with chapter one. And that became a real trap and a real obstacle to work, and maybe even a defense mechanism. Like, oh, well, the reason I'm never finishing this is because I can't, that bloody chapter one's holding us back, when really it's just because, yeah, it becomes an excuse not to. And then it's amazing how many of these things feel like such mental blocks, and all it takes is like a helpful bit of advice or technique to suddenly realize, well, I can just jump to chapter 25 because that feels like more fun at the moment. And yeah, the in an ideal world, in the ideal process, and when things are going well, it's a slightly weird metaphor, but it's like spinning plates, but in a good way. Like you're tending to different elements all at once, and each one hopefully is doing its job. And there isn't that sense of like well, you can't do this until you do that, which maybe even comes from like a slightly kind of kind of Puritan kind of work ethic of like, well, no, you can't like, you have to eat your greens first. Mm. You need to have start and main dessert. Yeah. Like, it's crazy to mix it up.
Did you find that it has any implications for plot that you've moving from different sections, you adjust something which has repercussions for the plot later on, which is, do you then have to go back to the paragraph that you just edited later in the book to fix that? Or
yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the positive way to think of that. It's like, it ought to be kind of like quantum entanglement, that when you move that bit, then that bit moves, you know, on the other side of the book. And that's evidence or proof that you have been tying these threads together and been thinking the whole work through. And it helps you keep in mind the overall work. If you are jumping around and it turns out that you're making loads of plot holes, then you probably need to go back to the drawing board and think about how all these parts are meant to interconnect.
Yeah. I think, I mean, that's definitely true. And the sort of approach where you start from the beginning and work your way through, it's easy to get sort of deep into the sort of weeds in chapter one and start making changes that sort of filter through until you get to chapter nine or something. You realize, oh, wait a minute, I've now changed this without even realizing it's now not working anymore.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're jumping from place to place, you're kind of keeping a consciousness of the overall picture with you at all times, which, yeah, I think you can sort of lose that with an editing approach where you're through from beginning to end.
Well, thank you, Marzin, for joining us, and thank you for listening. Just a quick bit of housekeeping here. I'd like to draw everyone's attention to a online poetry magazine called Harana Poetry, which is Harana Poetry.com. It's an online magazine publishing poetry written by people who have English as their second or parallel language, all fluent speakers, but it's about the interesting linguistic things that come through as a result of not having English as your first language.
Yeah, you can find out more about us online. I'm at lachlanbloom.com or on Twitter at lachlanbloom.
And I'm at jamiebatchin.com or at jamiebatchin on Twitter or at jamie_batchin on Instagram. And we are at unsoundmethods on Twitter. Thank you for joining us. Talk to you next time.